Bickley and Murata, Social Studies.
1 o'clock here already, fresh off the weekend. Sarah Cazell's ready to go. And when she's ready, we got to do this. So we have no choice. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Are any of us coming fresh into this week? Besides Jarrett, Carlin, I guess.
Jarrett is.
Jarrett.
Yeah.
You and your sitting at the San Diego Zoo with your sugary whatever that
Jarrett,
thing is called, snow cones.
Jarrett, what's the best thing you ate during your vacation?
Oh, man. Ooh. The first day we were there, we went to this really good seafood place. And I had just had clams and oysters on the half shell and grilled octopus. And mussels marinara, and all this grilled trout, all this great seafood. Mm. I love fresh seafood.
Wait, like a king.
That's King right. Jarrett.
Instead of the usual jester Jarrett.
Yeah. Who picked up the tab for that dinner?
Well, it was, you know. Yeah. Family.
Shout out to my parents.
Yeah.
Jarrett is smart. He does go on vacation with his family.
That's smart.
I made two big homemade lasagnas yesterday for Father's Day.
Oh,
celebration.
That's nice.
So
okay, so you're paying it back.
Yeah,
sure. Lasagna, yeah. Right. Seafood tower, same deal. Good for you. Well, welcome back, Jarrett. It is great to have you back. All right, let's get into social studies. On Twitter, at Bickley_Murata, that is where the questions go every single day, and that is where I pull your fabulous answers from. So let's start with before game one between the Suns and the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals yesterday. James Jones honored as the NBA Executive of the Year.
You know I'm back because there's a typo in the very first question.
Yes, that is correct. Two Vs. I did notice that, but I liked it.
For victory.
Exactly. James Jones, I love that DeAndre Ayton had to be the most excited person in the building when it was announced that James Jones got that award. That was the best reaction video.
He usually is the most excited
Thrilled for whatever is going on. Yeah, I love it. So we're looking at all of the different 2020-2021 season awards that the Suns could have, potentially should have won, but did not. They didn't get shut out, though, with James Jones here. So we are asking, of the other awards that the Suns did not get, which voting outcome do you find to be the most disrespectful or the most incorrect? Is it Chris Paul finishing fifth in MVP voting? Is it the fact that Monty Williams did not win Coach of the Year? Is it Devin Booker not making an All-NBA team? Or is it Mikal Bridges not making the All-NBA defensive team?
I'll start here. I will vote for the Devin Booker not making an All-NBA team.
Okay.
You, sir, are correct.
Yes.
That's where I would vote, too. I mean, that's four slaps in the face, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the book one probably bothered me the most.
Is that because there were 15 opportunities or?
Well, that and some of the guys that made it above that, you know, had good seasons but missed big chunks of the year that were there instead of Devin Booker.
There were a lot of guys there on reputation that, like I said, Devin Booker had a better year than Jimmy Butler. He had a better year than Kyrie Irving, in my opinion, although Kyrie had a stretch where he was sensational.
Mm-hmm.
Kyrie
also had a stretch where he just didn't show up to work.
Yeah, right. So. Yes. That too. That's exactly right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's really close between two of them, but Devin Booker not making an All-NBA team takes the top spot. Well, at least he won that one. 43% of our voters say Book not making an All-NBA team is the most disrespectful or wrong voting outcome through these postseason awards. 42% say Monty Williams not winning Coach of the Year was the worst outcome.
Mm-hmm.
11% went with Chris Paul finishing fifth in MVP voting, and 5% went with Mikal Bridges not making the all-defensive team.
Yeah. On the Monty front, I believe he was the Coach of the Year, but I just made the point during the commercial break. If they were going to redo that vote today, Nate McMillan might be a unanimous choice for Coach of the Year. He took over a team that was 14-20, and they're in the Eastern Conference Finals.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Jump and Shout responded, he thinks there's an argument for all of them, but he thinks Monty Williams is the most egregious. All I need to do is point out what the winner of that award is doing right now. And then he adds, well, then again, you could say that about the MVP as well.
Yes, true. He's riding horses in Serbia right now as we speak.
Is he actually a horse?
No, he rides in a cart behind the horse.
You say he's the size of a horse.
Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah.
Respectfully, Okay. Moving on to our next question. Stephen A. Smith said something this morning on ESPN that a connection that a lot of Suns fans, I think, have already made. I'm going to play the sound for those who have not heard it yet, though.
Devin Booker is the next Kobe Bryant.
Yep. Yep.
I'm saying it on national television. Devin Booker
said it.
Is the next Kobe Bryant.
Yeah.
Okay. I think
that went on to say it's official now because he said it.
Because Stephen A. said it. Oh, thank you, Stephen A.
Look out for Phoenix, y'all.
Ah. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So a lot of people, or a lot of Suns fans, have already made the comparison to his mentor and somebody he greatly respected, Kobe Bryant. We're asking, what player does Devin Booker most remind you of? And if it's not Kobe, who else would it be?
I've struggled with this because it's really hard to find a comp to the way Devin Booker plays basketball and creates shots. There's a physicality to his game that I think Kobe may not have had to that level. But
creating shots for other players, too, is not a thing that Kobe really
does. Yeah, I think that... I don't know where I would go with it. I really wouldn't. But I do think the ruthlessness, the ability to talk trash, the ability to get in the moment and run hot, that's very Kobe-like. I don't know. That's a really hard question.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of, like, competitive fire and even some of the moves and the way they operate on the court, Kobe Bryant is the answer. But I also think Kobe, and maybe I'm just saying this because I was not a Lakers fan, but I think he would get under people's skin more.
Mm-hmm.
He was more demonstrative on the court with the facial expressions and the talking and such. And I know Devin Booker talks too, but I guess I would lean Kobe more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I really hope in 5 years we're talking about who's the next Devin Booker.
Yeah.
Instead of comparing Book to others.
Definitely. A lot of people responded and said Devin Booker reminds me most of Devin Booker, and that's that. Big Poppy says Book reminds him of a Kobe who passes. A few people pointed that out. Maticus says that he reminds him of Kobe or Brandon Roy minus the injuries. Assassins from mid-range, despite the injuries that took Brandon Roy out of his career. DeSuns fan also mentions Brandon Roy, a bigger Brandon Roy, but with the attitude of Rajah Bell.
I like that.
Yeah. Bent Bow says Larry Bird-ish. You knew when his shot was going in. Jason Kidd gets a mention from Mark Barr.
Okay. I don't see that one at all, but...
Yeah, he was the only person who wrote that. Pat Burke gets a mention.
Oh, goodness.
Yeah, I know. It really is Kobe overwhelmingly followed by people saying he isn't anybody else but Devin Booker. And moving on to our final question. Quickly, we are asking with Devin Booker's affinity for really cool-looking classic cars, we are asking if Devin Booker himself were a classic car, be it real or fictional, what car would he be and why?
I got one for this.
Ooh, oh, you do.
He would be a time machine made out of a DeLorean because his mid-range game is bringing the NBA back in time.
Oh!
Brett Scott!
Oh, my goodness.
That's good. Do you have one?
And he played yesterday's game at 88 miles per hour!
No.
Don't try and marry your mother.
Right.
Please.
Devin, what was the name of that car that he pulled up to in the arena? That last great American muscle car. What was the name of that?
The Buick Grand National.
That's it. The Grand National. Yeah. That's what he is.
Classic. He's the last great American muscle car.
Right. Works for me.
The DeLorean gets a few shout-outs. Steven Nick Meyer says, because Book brought the future to the present. Greg Rosenthal says, the James Bond Aston Martin. Classic throwback on the outside, but he can kill you in multiple ways. And when he's ready, he pushes the button and ejects you.
Okay.
How about this from Artur Abramian? A newer Corvette among foreign supercars. Overlooked, but can bring it like the rest of them, and has the best bang for your buck. Lauren Ortega says Herbie the Love Bug because yesterday he went bananas.
Oh, boy.
I like Daniel Reed's comments, too. The Pontiac Fiero, grossly underrated, unconventional. unconventional and favorably viewed in hindsight.
Final one
That's
for
good.
Me. Final one for me. Sally Dantimo says, Booker is like Tow Mater from Cars because he can carry his team.
Oh, that's good.
Peter Dune.
We get questions like that. The creativity of our audience really comes through.
It shines.
Yes.
It's the best.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, guys.
Social studies every day at 1 o'clock with Sarah Cazell. You can get involved and follow along on Twitter at Bickley_Murata. Coming up next, he was just recently described as always the most excited guy in the arena. We got to talk about the evolution of DeAndre Ayton a little bit more. We'll do it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's Sports Station and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns Clippers now.
I'm having a lot of fun. To be honest, what I expected, I just expected, you know, just the environment to be really intense, like it really is. I can't hear myself sometimes. You know, dudes playing physical, you're seeing some of the, you know, the biggest trash talkers, and, you know, you come across some tendencies that you'll never see in the game, you know, trick plays, little vet moves and stuff like that you have to ignore. You know, you can't really get caught up in stuff like that, but you just know the task at hand. But beyond that, it's fun. You know, just approaching the game the right way, and I'm ready.
That's DeAndre Ayton after yesterday's Game 1 win by the Suns. He was fantastic again. 10 of 14 from the floor, 20 points, 9 rebounds, 3 on the offensive end. He had 2 assists. You pointed out his passing earlier on. 1 foul in the game, too.
Wow.
And that's one thing that we were wondering in that last series, Bick, about DeAndre Ayton and how he was going to hold up having the primary defensive assignment against Nikola Jokic, the league MVP, who's a really tough player to guard because he's got so many tricks in his bag. And really, outside of a couple of glimpses, there was nothing resembling foul trouble for DeAndre Ayton in that series. It happened once.
No.
I think it was back in game 2. That, to me, is the sign of growth as a defensive player when you can play that good position defense and not be in foul trouble. And foul trouble's become kind of a very, very uncommon thing for DeAndre Ayton to have 1 foul yesterday against that collection. Different players that they threw at him the whole game.
Yeah.
Again, very impressive.
I've been blown away, to be honest with you, because over the weekend, watching Ben Simmons do what he did, get the ball underneath the rim and pass it out to the wing when he could go up and dunk, I thought, back in the dark ages, that is what DA would do. And I would pull my hair out. And there was times when I wondered aloud on this radio station when he had the drop season, when his hands seemed to be very unreliable. I remember really feeling scared about what happens if this guy is like this in playoff games, because Bobby Marks said it during our visit today. If you've got any weakness at all on the floor in the playoffs, they will feast on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember saying at that time, if the Suns get into a situation where it's 4-on-5 in these high-leverage situations, that is not good. I just can't believe how he has corrected all of his issues to the point now where he is playing with force, he's dunking on people, he's defending the rim. Yesterday he received his single foul on an over-the-back call in which he was actively trying to jump over a guy to tip the ball in, and I thought...
Which he did, by the way. The ball went through, and they waved it off.
Which he did, and I thought, this is just... I mean, he's gone from a viewer to a eager participant, and the changes in him are just unbelievable to me, and it's part of why this team feels so invincible right now, because of his growth, and it's fabulous, because everything about the kid's personality is wonderful as long as he's playing.
Yeah.
As long as he's giving it his all. Because now we can celebrate this kid. If you'd have told me 5 months ago that there's a chance, a good chance, the Suns are going to win a championship and we are never going to bring up the Luka Doncic draft pick ever again, I'd like, yeah, right. Do you know what that's like to be liberated from that kind of haunting, if you will?
And it's happening in 2 NBA and, cities right now,
right
simultaneously.
Now, simultaneously. Simultaneously.
Yeah.
It's happening in Atlanta. It's happening here. Yeah, it's awesome. I couldn't be happier, because nothing is more frustrating than guys, you know, have all the talent in the world and just don't know how to channel, how to engage it. And all the conversations we've had about, can you teach a puppy how to bite if they're not biting at that? If they're not biting to start, can they really develop it? That's really why, to me, the addition of Chris Paul was just so remarkably brilliant, because it just checked so many boxes. So many things that were needed came in one guy. And again, I'm not trying to deflect DeAndre's success. He's earned this. Jay Crowder, during our visit with him, I thought that was very poignant what he said. When he said, listen, I brought him over and I said, listen, I respect you, man, because it wasn't words. Because we've heard the words from DA. We've heard everything he's going to do. And he said, you did it between the lines, and I respect that. And that's, and you know, we've seen it. Jay Crowder, during the bad times, when they started playing important basketball games and DA was messing up, Jay Crowder was not happy at all. You'd see it on the court
a
few times.
Absolutely.
Because he's a winning player, and he's not going to deal with that. So him, Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Monty Williams, they've all grown this guy. And to DA's credit, he's received it all.
Yeah,
and responded.
That's a huge key to all of it. Monty Williams talked about that today with the media about what DeAndre Ayton is in the process of learning.
DA has, you know, learned like most young guys do when you come into the league. There's just a lot more details to the work and a lot more stuff involved as far as pre-practice stuff, post-practice. It's a lot, but you get used to it over time. So that's been the thing that he's consistently improved after we had a number of conversations. And it wasn't like he was ever a bad worker, but we just felt like he has the kind of ability that, you know, if he puts in the kind of work that I've seen guys with his kind of ability put in, he can be a dominant player. And he knows that it takes a lot to be really good in this league. And he's, you know, the guy that's willing to do all the extra stuff. And we just want him to be the best version of himself.
Yeah, and he's becoming that best version of himself offensively, defensively. Again, shooting the high percentage, really not doing anything out of his comfort zone right now offensively, which you could say at times that would be a detriment. But he doesn't force anything.
It's amazing.
He's taken a handful of mid-range jumpers in this postseason.
Yep.
How few jumpers he's taken.
Yeah. Where that used to be a staple. And something that I would point to and say, yeah, keep taking that shot, because his touch is so soft that even if he's not true with it, he's going to get a lot of rolls off the rim. But he's just kind of completely eliminated that. We were talking in the bubble last year about, wow, DeAndre Ayton's adding a three-point shot.
Let
that go bye-bye.
Yeah,
that's
not
fine.
Necessary. Yeah, it's, yeah, I think it's just been, it's been remarkable. I love how engaged he is with this group. I love the piece he wrote, or someone wrote for him in the Players Tribune, where he basically talked about, he said, the thing about this basketball team is they're full of trolls. You show one sign of weakness and you're going to get ridiculed and laughed at and joked at, which is a sign of a really close group, right? And to hear him say that, it's also, he said he hates being called big fella. And it's funny, because a lot, you'll hear that a lot from kids who are abnormally tall. They want to be less tall, less big, and more normal. They don't want to stand out, at least at a young age. And so sometimes you get that. You get big men who want to kind of shrink a little bit. And I'm not trying to be a dime store psychologist here, but I'm trying to say that this has been accomplished through nurturing and love, is what it's, you know what I mean? This has been through sheer investment in DeAndre as a person and a teammate,
but
from the leaders of this team.
But a lot of times, tough love.
Yeah, I think it's been a good combination of Monty giving him the nurturing, and then CP3 and Booker giving him the tough love.
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, right, exactly. But it isn't just the tough stuff.
Yeah. It's all getting through.
Right.
Win a pair of tickets to Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. Just text TICKET to 620-620 and listen for your name every hour starting at 7 a.m. tomorrow for your chance to win Phoenix Suns playoff tickets. That's TICKET to 620-620. Monty Williams had a lot of other things to say today in his media availability, including a very, very short quote-unquote update on Chris Paul. We'll tell you what he said next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The home of the Suns run to the championship. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station, and the Arizona Sports app. Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Kilt Lifter. Bickley and Murata talk Suns Clippers now.
No, there's no update, Chris. Nothing's changed.
Told you it was short. Monty Williams today talking with the media. Nothing's changed with Chris Paul. I think now that we are, what, about 28 hours away from tip-off, you have to start to prepare for life without Chris Paul in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, and then maybe look toward Thursday in L.A. for Game 3 return. That is the locale where Chris Paul is already at, so... I'm not saying anything definitively, but you know, there's only so much time in a day.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm curious if and when Chris Paul does return, if he's going to be asked if indeed he was vaccinated, and if it even matters, because there's a danger in if he hasn't, and it's a personal choice, but if he hasn't, there'd be a lot of criticism coming his way. How could you put us in that kind of situation? So my gut feeling is none of this will ever be addressed. That once Chris Paul returns, he's just going to return to basketball. And that's going to be the end of it.
Look, I know your background. You are not adverse to asking tough questions.
Right.
Would you feel comfortable asking that question?
I don't know. I thought about that, and I thought about in that situation if I would, but I don't think so, because I think that's under the umbrella of personal information, and if you do not want to share that with people, you are not required to share that with people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think from that standpoint, it doesn't necessarily matter, but there's a lot of confusion right now that if he is vaccinated, my feeling on this is I think the NBA needs to update their standards and their protocol because it's hurting the Phoenix Suns. And I'm obviously very biased in that. If you're going to trust the science of vaccinations, then to the point where you're allowing 19,000 people to attend basketball games, then I just think there should just be a little more transparency and realness to the situation. But it's not just the NBA. It applies to a lot of things. So I think, obviously, the sooner he gets back, the better. But I'm very confident that this team can win Game 2 without him after what I saw yesterday. I think Game 1, I think that was a big step. The second half was a big step for campaign, in my opinion. I really do.
Yeah.
I think that was a big, big moment for him.
Look,
and Devin Booker and all this, and just the momentum they have, I like their chances.
Look, they got a good performance, the Clippers did, from Paul George. Now, it wasn't a complete four-quarter performance. In fact, he scored 1 point in the fourth quarter and was 0-for-5 from the floor. So in L.A., they might be a little bit more critical of Paul George. But the way he played for the first three quarters, you're like, the Suns are getting their best shot from Paul George, and they're right here without Chris Paul. And I know they're without Kawhi Leonard. I get it. Both teams are compromised right now on that front. But, yeah, I feel confident, and the Suns should feel confident that they can win without Chris Paul, because now they've done it under different circumstances three times this year. Three games they've played without any of the services of Chris Paul, and they've won all three. Now, Monty Williams did talk about discussing things with Chris Paul after the game yesterday.
A lot of it was because we won the game, for sure. He was excited about that. It's always good to see his face. I just think it was based on the fact that we were able to win the game. So, you know, everybody was in that winning game mood, obviously. And you know, he and I have talked every day about our team and what we're seeing in other playoff games and just trying to improve. So we did that with Tyshawn when he wasn't with us in LA. We just try to make sure that we keep everybody in the fold, and we're not family, but we try to act like we're a family. And so that was just a way to keep him locked in. I'm not quite sure if he called or if somebody else called him, but when I walked in, he was on FaceTime. So he became a part of the locker room.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't fast, because Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton were both doing post-game interviews, and they walked off the court together, and as soon as they get in the tunnel, I believe it was Cole Michelson handing them the phone and go, here you go. That's when the conversation started. You just saw video of of Devin Booker talking to Chris Paul.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. It was really interesting. Yeah,
look, sometimes you got to adjust on the fly, and the Suns did that yesterday.
Doesn't that tell you something about Chris Paul, that even in the situation of being away from this, he has to be that involved? It's just who he is. He also knows that this is a great, great opportunity for him, and it's a long-awaited opportunity. I did not know this. I thought the number was 9, but apparently Chris Paul's been on 10 All-NBA teams, and that's by far the most for any player who has never been to the NBA Finals.
Wow.
Yeah. So my point is I think there's a feeling across basketball that this guy really deserves it. That he's been at a level his entire career and sabotaged by bad breaks so frequently that he really deserves this. Yeah, and I think his current teammates feel it too. Even guys who are relatively newcomers to the NBA, anyways. I think they all know who Chris Paul is, and I think they're all vibing on that.
Yeah, I mean, this is the second closest Chris Paul's ever been to a title. It was a little closer when they were up on Golden State and he got hurt in the Western Conference Finals, but this still might represent his best chance to get there. And if he does get there, right, and the Suns accomplish the ultimate goal, that does a lot to solidify Chris Paul's place in history. Oh. Magic Johnson even talked about
definitely
it.
To me, a top 5 point guard, top 7-6 point guard of all time. And then what he's doing, not turning the ball over too.
Yeah, clean.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Getting all those assists, not turning the ball over. But let him get done first. I think right now we're too early to judge guys. He's still got a lot of basketball to play. And so let him still – he's still building his resume. And I think that what I want him to do, not only get to the final, but win one, right?
Yeah, and I think Magic Johnson brings up a good point there.
Wow!
And that is, he's not done yet. Just because he's 36 years old doesn't mean the tank is empty. He proved that this year, and I think there's a lot of people in Phoenix, Arizona that are hoping Chris Paul's got like 3 years of basketball left in him.
Yeah.
And a lot could change in those 3 years as well.
And again, this is where I think him and Devin Booker vibe so well. Chris Paul puts in all this time that so many other players put elsewhere,
mm-hmm,
and he puts it back into basketball and his body because he wants to keep this going. And you think about where do you have to be as a competitor to get 16, 17 years into a professional sport, have hundreds of millions of dollars in the bank, but just you can't imagine a life without this. So you're going to extraordinary measures to milk it. Tom Brady's doing the same thing in football. And speaking of Tom Brady, I don't know if you saw this, but there's this clip that's gone out social media today where he's talking about how one team didn't want to sign him last year because they wanted to stick with this bleep. And people are like, who is he talking about? And people are assuming it's Jimmy Garoppolo.
I haven't seen this.
This bleep of bleep.
Yeah, this bleeping bleep, right. Yeah. And you talk about
your
a guy.
Former teammate, your former Patriot brother, you're calling bleeping bleep?
Not necessarily, they don't know for certain it's him, but he's saying there's a team that didn't want me because they're going to stick with this guy. And people are going, wow, you're really taking a few victory laps here, Tom.
Wow.
Right, but that's okay because those guys run at a different level. And Chris Paul's the exact same way. You know, to be this committed to doing everything it takes to making sure you are stretching your prime. Game of basketball means an awful lot to you if you're doing that.
If you want to do the Chris Paul-Tom Brady comparison, the Chris Paul thing makes more sense to me because he's never been to the mountaintop. Tom Brady's been there, 7 times?
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
To have that level of competitive fire still burning after 7, there might be something wrong with Tom Brady.
Yeah, well, that's true. I think you're right about that.
Breaking news. I mean, everybody wants to get there at least once.
Yeah.
And you know, credit to him. It's not diminished by the fact that he's won so many times, but goodness.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Take a chill here, Tom.
Right. Yeah. Have a burrito, man.
Oh, words to live by right there.
No doubt.
That would make a great Bickley and Murata t-shirt. It's a picture of Tom Brady with the quote, "Have a burrito, man." Win a pair of tickets to game 2 of the Western Conference Finals. Just text ticket to 620-620 and listen for your name every hour starting at 7 a.m. tomorrow for your chance to win Phoenix Suns playoff tickets. That is Ticket to 620. 620. Coming up, we'll continue to talk about the Suns in the Western Conference Finals. We'll be joined by Burns and Gambo to do just that next. It's Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Suns playoff coverage presented by Four Peaks Keltlifter. Burns and Gambo join Bickley and Murata to talk Suns in the Western Conference Finals. Suns playoff crosstalk.
Yeah, we do it after every Suns playoff game, which, by the way, they've won 8 straight. They're up 1-0 on the Clippers now in the Western Conference Finals with Game 2 tomorrow. And you'll hear them on the air for the next 4 hours, Burns and Gambo, from 2 to 6. And you'll hear them for the next 10 minutes or so here on Bickley and Murata. Boys, how are you?
Fun. Excited. That was a lot of fun yesterday.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
It was such a close game for so long.
Yeah.
There was just no separation. It was like, so you're on, you know, you're almost on pins and needles, mm-hmm. like, because you just didn't know which way it was going to go until the Suns finally were able to pull away at the end. And even with that,
the last
2-point game with 22 seconds
the
left.
The last 2 minutes of that game were so, that sequence where it was Clippers miss offensive rebound, Clippers miss offensive rebound. I was ready to pull my hair out.
Yeah, it's pretty rare in today's NBA to see a full 48-minute game played within a 16-point range. And that range was the Clippers' biggest lead was 6, the Suns' biggest lead was 10. And you think, 16 points, that's a big spread. It really isn't when you consider the whole spectrum of it. Devin Booker, obviously, was phenomenal. I'm sure you guys will talk about that a lot today and the reaction to that performance. But Burnsy, I'll start with you. Your biggest non-Devin Booker takeaway.
Mikal Bridges at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Mikal Bridges at the end of the game, the block, the three-pointer, the drives to the rim, the attacking the rim, the way he that, and I mean, it's kind of Devin Booker-centric, but when Payne goes out with the fifth foul, kind of the Devin Booker point book, and here's Mikal, and here's Cam Johnson, and here's Jay Crowder, and here's DeAndre Ayton. And that became the finishing lineup, basically, for the Suns. I thought, given that Cam Johnson and Mikal don't spend a ton of time on the floor together, haven't this year, that was a really interesting way to close out the game for Monty. But mostly, my non-Devin Booker takeaway was Mikal at the end of that game and the plays that he made to help seal it. But I can only guess what Gambo's is going to be. I can take a pretty good guess.
I mean, I could always go with Ayton because he was great again. I mean, 6 dunks, he's playing great. But there was a stretch, and I don't know. To me, I'm going to go with there was a stretch in the fourth quarter when they were resting some guys. When it was DA, it was Cam, it was Mikal, it was Craig. You got a 3-pointer by Payne. You got a dunk from Cam off a Booker miss. You got a dunk from DA. They went on this little run because that was a tie game going into the third.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were up by 10. So that little stretch where they were resting some guys, they were able to get up by 10, 105-95, you know, with Torrey Craig on the floor and with Cam Johnson on the floor and with Dario on the floor because Dario came in for DA very early in that quarter and they had a little bit of a run there. I thought that was a big part of the game playing with 4 subs. They were able to build the lead to 10.
My biggest non-Devin Booker takeaway was just after the game, even before the game, just how close this championship feels to me now.
Oh yeah.
It's always been it's been a concept, it's been something we know is a possibility, but it feels like it's happening.
I do not believe in jinxes.
Me neither.
I'll just say it right now. But I almost tweeted out something after the Nets lost to the extent of the path is clear.
Yep.
There are no roadblocks in your way.
Nope. Yeah.
Anybody who's familiar with this organization, I heard you guys talking about this earlier, and I want to add to that conversation if I could a little bit. You were talking about Jordan being the roadblock back in 93, and he certainly was. I'd put the Spurs in there as a roadblock the 05 to 07 range. The Spurs were the thing you could not get past. It doesn't feel as if there is a roadblock in front of this team.
No potholes.
Especially with the Nets out, right? I don't know what the... Now, Kawhi comes back. Maybe that becomes your roadblock, right? Kawhi makes some... I heard Bobby Marks with you on earlier. If he doesn't think he's going to play, but if he does, maybe that becomes the roadblock. I don't know.
On that front, have you guys heard anybody with good information on the NBA say the phrase, I think Kawhi is coming back this series. I haven't heard anybody say
it. No, they haven't said he's out, so I think that makes us all a little skeptical.
Sure,
right?
But listen, they're playing the game.
They got down 2-0 to Dallas.
Yes.
They got down 2-0 to Utah.
Yes.
So, like, for them, okay, they've been down. But you can, like, you can't go to that well too many times.
No.
Okay, well, you've got to win 4 out of 5 to win a series. Like, it's just, if the Suns win this game tomorrow at 2-0, they're in the drive, just like Dallas was in Utah. But I think the Suns are better, though. Utah's terrible defensively.
Oh, they were atrocious on Friday night.
And Dallas is terrible defensively.
Yes.
And the Suns aren't. So you could do that against Dallas, and you're not going to do that against the Suns.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think you can.
No, but I do think, to the flip side of that coin, the Clippers are by far the best team the Suns have played
Absolutely.
So far in the postseason. And I do expect this win streak will, at some point, come to an end during this series. The Clippers are just, and I think where the difference might be lies in the margins of Paul George just having his legs a little bit more in the fourth quarter of maybe the next game, if he's had a chance to rest.
Yeah.
He had a good game yesterday.
But a lousy fourth quarter.
Lousy fourth quarter. He faded a little bit. That might have been fatigue. That might not be a factor the next time around, and he might be stronger in the fourth. Plus, the Clippers have this proclivity of just going berserk from the three-point line. I feel like that game is coming at some point in this series. It's highly unlikely Suns in four gets repeated in the conference finals against a team of this caliber.
Look, I agree, but they have no time to rest.
No, they really don't.
They've had, like, they have no time to rest. And when you run into these, you know, these longer series like they're playing, man, like, it's, you know, it could do them in. Yeah.
To your point on their ability to shoot three-pointers, Burnsy, they made 20 of them yesterday, and that's been a benchmark for them.
Yeah.
A benchmark they've only hit 7 times, including the regular season this year. That was the first game they lost. So the Suns have to feel good about that, too, that Paul George hit 7 threes. The Clippers hit 20 threes, and, you know, it was manageable because of what they did elsewhere defensively, and it held them to 45% shooting.
And I do think the Clippers are now, Ty Lue's really good at the adjusting thing. I get that. But boy, when so Ayton plays against the small lineup, he dominates it. So let's go big. Let's put Zubac out there. Let's put Boogie Cousins out there. And you got a little bump from that for a while. Devin Booker tore that lineup apart in the third quarter because they were playing that drop defense on him, and he was basically saying, fine, mid-range jumpers all day long.
It was
all day.
Instead of Jokic playing the drop and Chris Paul hitting the jumpers, it was the big for the Clippers dropping and Booker hitting the jumpers.
Ayton, and I'm really impressed by this. Ayton's ability to change teams' defenses and what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
He forced the Lakers into 3 changes.
Mm-hmm.
He's already forced the Clippers into changes. Those guys played 31 minutes and 18 seconds. They don't ever play that much, you know? So, I mean, you go look at the amount of games Cousins has played since he's got there. He was on 2 10-day contracts, and then they signed him. He didn't play much. So DeAndre Ayton's ability to force these teams to have to change what they want to do has been amazing.
Denver, too. I mean, they went to JaVale McGee, for goodness sake, late in that series. And they benched Paul Millsap late in that series in game 4, which I thought was a tactical mistake. You're exactly right.
Everything but 2 shots was within 6 feet of the basket for DeAndre.
We were talking about that earlier. He looked comfortable for so long this year and in his career shooting that 15-foot jumper, and he's completely eliminated from his game, and I'm all for it.
I think he took one yesterday.
Took one.
And it was like, oh, I haven't seen that in a while.
Exactly.
I almost forgot what it looked like.
Exactly.
You know, I had this moment of, oh, yeah, he used to do that all the time. He never does that anymore. it was the weirdest thing. I can't even remember.
You remember the last time he fumbled the ball with fans?
No, and we just had this conversation that at his low point this season, when he could not catch the basketball, I wondered if they get into situations in high leverage playoff games, teams are going to feast on him because you can't go into a playoff series with a weak link on the floor. What happened to Ben Simmons over the weekend at one point in time would have happened to DeAndre Ayton. Who DA has become at this point in the season is mind-blowing, and he deserves all the credit in the world.
Reading a story on The Athletic, in which kind of broke down yesterday's game, and they had a video clip of, and I can't remember who, I think it was Torrey Craig, in which Booker fed the ball to Ayton, kind of between the circles, and he faked a pass out on the wing, got the guy to bite, and had the presence of mind to hit Craig in the corner, and it was, wow, DeAndre Ayton seeing the floor, understanding the floor, that kind of that moment where you go, oh, wow, he gets it.
Yeah, and no timidity at all.
None whatsoever. Yeah. No hesitation. No. Like, I've got a you're going to give me the ball here. I'm gonna fake it that way. I'm going to go that way, and everyone's going to bite. They're going to fly right by, and that's exactly what happened.
All right, what do you expect real quick in terms of adjustments game 2 from the Clippers? We'll get into more of it tomorrow, I'm sure.
But. I think they got to stick with what got them there, and that's Batum at center, because I don't think that big lineup works against the Suns. They'll have to take that punishment with DA.
I think they stay small. Oh,
sorry. Yeah, I don't know. I think they're going to do something. I don't know what, but going big I don't think works for them. It's a sign of desperation.
Same, Burns.
Stay small. Yeah, stay small.
That's going to be on their playoff T-shirts. L.A. Clippers, stay small.
Stay small, Pony Boys, stay small.
Thanks, guys. We'll be listening. Burns and Gambo coming up 2 to 6. Thanks to our guests today, Kellen Olsen and Bobby Marks, who joined us. Thanks to you for hanging out as well. We appreciate it. We'll do it again tomorrow at 10. Yeah, these guys up next on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Have a great day, everybody.